chapter 5, verse 21 to 42.
Jairus' daughter and the woman who touched Jesus' cloak. Jesus went back across to the other side of the lake. There at the lakeside, a large crowd gathered round him. Jairus, an official of the local synagogue, arrived, and when he saw Jesus, he threw himself down at his feet and begged him earnestly, "My little daughter is very sick. Please come and place your hands on her so that she'll get well and live." Then Jesus started off with him. So many people were going along with Jesus that they were crowding him from every side. There was a woman who'd suffered terribly from severe bleeding for 12 years, even though she'd been treated by many doctors. She'd spent all her money, but instead of getting better, she got worse all the time. She had heard about Jesus, so she came in the crowd behind him, saying to herself, "If I just touch his clothes, I will get well." She touched his cloak, and her bleeding stopped at once, and she had the feeling inside herself that she was healed of her trouble. At once, Jesus knew that power had gone out of him, so he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples answered, "You see how the people are crowding you. Why do you ask who touched you?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. The woman realized what had happened to her, so she came trembling with fear, knelt at his feet, and told him the whole truth. Jesus said to her, "My daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your trouble." While Jesus was saying this, some messengers came from Jairus' house and told him, "Your daughter has died. Why bother the teacher any longer?" Jesus paid no attention to what they said, but told him, "Don't be afraid, only believe." Then he did not let anyone else go on with him except Peter and James and his brother John. They arrived at Jairus' house, where Jesus saw the confusion and heard all the loud crying and wailing. He went in and said to them, "Why all this confusion? Why are you crying? The child is not dead. She is only sleeping." They started making fun of him. So he put them all out, took the child's father and mother and his three disciples, and went into the room where the child was lying. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I tell you to get up." She got up at once and started walking around. She was 12 years old. When this happened, they were completely amazed.
There was a time when dads were really useful. I know that in view of what we've seen this morning, that is rather hard to believe, especially in view of the activities we saw of maths homework and Tinkerbell. I'd only just realised when you look closely, come and have a look at the end. It is really dreadful. And the Lego as well. But not all that long ago, dads were respected and looked up to. Take the maths, for instance. If my dad got my maths homework wrong, he'd just say, "Well, I've done it a different way." And I'd believe him as well. You didn't dare question your dad. Dads were respected, really, because they could do so many useful things that no one else could do. They could mend things and make things. Note that, Paul. They could service a car. They could dig the garden. They could look after money and other complicated things. They could drive in heavy traffic. And they could do any job that involved getting wet or cold. And in those days, even thinking of such things made a lady feel faint and need to lie down. Mothers could also use fathers as ogres to terrify naughty children. "Just you wait till your father comes home," was a cry that would go up throughout the land at about 4 o'clock. And sure enough, about 5 o'clock, Dad would come home after a hard day's work, ready to do a bit of spanking and sending naughty children to bed early. Well, yes. But strangely, in the last 30 to 40 years, somehow mothers began to realise that the things that dads were so good at weren't really that difficult at all. And let's face it, if you have what we've seen this morning, they could hardly do worse. They've discovered that, in fact, it was probably just as easy to do these things themselves. So women began to take on the jobs that previously only dads had been able to do. And, of course, they took all these dads' jobs on top of all the jobs that ladies have always been so very good at. Shopping, cooking, cleaning, washing, chopping, bringing up children, giving birth to children, shopping, and always being right. And now we have, of course, not only can women do all these things, but because they can multitask, they can do every single one of them at the same time. Or so they like to think. So this, of course, was a disaster for dads, because now there's not an awful lot left for us dads to be good at. Well, nothing really, apart from, as Lou pointed out earlier, the ability to be laughed at. Yes, only dads can tell bad joke after bad joke without realising how bad they truly are. Only dads can embarrass their children with the skill that us dads can. I often say to my children, if God had wanted them to have serious, efficient, practical parents, then he would have given them two mothers. But it's not really a good position for us dads to be in. We're a bit like Father Christmas, I suppose. We're celebrated and indulged once a year and then ignored and forgotten about for the rest. If we're lucky. It's a tough life being a dad. Well, preparing for the Father's Day service today, the family service team were relieved to find that there is actually one really useful dad, one really useful, successful dad in the whole of the Bible, and that's apart from God himself. That may come as a surprise to you, ladies, but what's even more surprising is that this man, Jairus, was successful precisely because of that supreme dad-like quality of concentrating on one thing until he'd finished it. He couldn't multitask, of course, he was a man. But he could keep going at one job without giving up. And even though, like any DIY project that any dad anywhere has ever undertaken, it was much more difficult than he could possibly have imagined. It took much longer, and it was made more difficult by a load of women who kept on getting in the way. Just like DIY. So, let's meet Jairus. Or perhaps we should call him the Reverend Jairus, because we read that he was an official of the local synagogue. So the closest modern job, I suppose, would be a vicar or a church minister. As a church minister, he was, of course, respected and looked up to, and extremely well paid. So much so that he could afford servants. How little, I mean much, has changed over the years. And when we first meet Jairus, he's already meeting his first problem caused by the first woman. Well, that's a little bit harsh, I suppose, because it was his daughter, and she couldn't help being ill. Very ill, in fact. Which must have put the next woman, Mrs. Jairus, into quite a tiz. But because in those days it wasn't the done thing for vicars' wives to run around the countryside looking for travelling healers, so, of course, that difficult, stressful, potentially cold-stroke wet-making job fell to Dad. Now, actually, finding Jesus wasn't that difficult, because wherever Jesus went, he was surrounded by crowds. But that was also the problem, because fighting your way through the crowds to get to him was incredibly difficult and stressful at the best of times. It was a bit like being stuck at the back of a queue on the M25 and being told that you've got to get to the front of the queue, find the slow lorry that's causing the problem, persuade it to stop, turn round, and come back the other way. But Jairus was a man with a mission, and showing true dad-like qualities, he was focused on just one thing, getting Jesus to come and heal his daughter. He fought his way to the front of the crowd, who must have been amazed to see their well-dressed, respectable vicar throw himself down in the mud at Jesus' feet. If you want to imagine the full picture here, think Reverend Beasley Murray, not Reverend Hills. A bit of mud might have actually improved his clothes. Didn't want you to feel left out after this morning. But Reverend or not, Jairus was just like any other dad, desperate to see his daughter saved. He was a dad who wasn't going to give up. Jesus quickly agreed to come, so Jairus' job would have been done if it wasn't for another woman. This woman had been suffering from a nasty problem for 12 years, an illness which only ladies could get, and meant that all respectable Jews would have avoided their company. And with a truly female sense of timing, she chose this moment to touch Jesus' cloak and get healed. And while all this kerfuffle was going on, as we heard earlier, messengers came with the terrible news that Jairus' daughter was dead. So, game over, you might have thought. Surely even the most persistent dad would give up now, slink away into the crowd to hide the embarrassment of being the man that even Jesus couldn't help. But not so fast, because Jesus didn't seem to be giving up. So Jairus had to make a split-second decision, whether to give up now or stick with Jesus. But there was one more group of women to get in the way, and these were the worst of them all, the woeful, wailing women. Now, this wasn't grandma and a couple of aunties letting the odd tear trickle down their noses. These women were really good. They were professional mourners. They did this for a job. The more you paid them, the louder they wailed. And that showed everybody how important the dead person had been. It was worse than two episodes of Holby City and Casualty stuck together. Obviously, these professional wailers didn't take kindly to being told that they were wasting their time and that their services were no longer needed. So they switched from whining to sarcastic laughter. Again, Jairus had to make an important decision. Was he going to stick with Jesus, even though everyone was laughing at him, and believe that somehow Jesus could actually defeat death? Or was he going to side with the wailers and give up? Well, of course, the story had a happy ending. Because he refused to give up, Jairus saw his daughter snatched back from death and his family restored. And Jesus, too, I think, must have really enjoyed the satisfying experience of unceremoniously booting out the wailing women and giving life back to the little girl and the little girl back to her parents. So what can we learn from Jairus, the dad who refused to give up? Well, the first thing is just that. We never need to give up on Jesus. Time and again, the Bible encourages us to keep on asking God for what we need and not to give up. Matthew chapter 6, your Father already knows what you need before you ask him. Matthew chapter 7, ask and you will receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you. Ephesians 6, keep alert and never give up. Hebrews 12, do not let yourselves become discouraged and give up. Sticking at things is never easy. Like Jairus, we might have to fight our way through crowds of doubts and difficulties in order to find him. We may find that our nice, neat lives get a bit muddy and messy, just like Jairus's nice clothes did. At times, people may laugh at us for following Jesus, just as the wailing women did. But if we keep on and don't give up, Jesus will meet our needs, even if his timing isn't always quite what we'd like. For he never gives up on us. There's one other thing that we can learn as well, and possibly even more important. And in order to do that, I need to first of all carry out a little experiment, which could go really well or could result in total chaos. I need someone who is sort of a volunteer who is fairly stout and sensible. In fact, someone who is the same age as Jairus' daughter, perhaps 12 years old. Perhaps someone who's become 12 this week. Is he there? Oh, yes, thank you. Do you mind that? You need someone mature and a teenager, in fact, as you now are. Matt was 12 on Tuesday?
Thursday,
sorry about that, yes. Right, okay, where's the microphone gone? I said this might end in chaos. Oh, it's here, under my script. Okay, so in this box, it says celebrations. It's not actually celebrations. It is Haribo, various different types. That's true, is it not? Would you like one yourself to start off with? Yeah, go for it. And have another one, because it's your birthday on Thursday. And have another one, because you might get a lot of pain in a moment. In fact, it might be your last meal. Okay. Now, if you're a man, if you're a woman, you could have held this and eaten the sweets at the same time, but you might need to put them down for later. Could you hold the tin? Thank you. Right. Okay. And while Matt is holding that, I want to... See, emergency services are here already. I want everybody under the age of 18 who would like to... In the space of 1 minute, only 1 minute, to come up and get a sweet. Start now. No more under 18-year-olds. Okay, we'll have to open it up to dads as well. Any dads who want a sweet, come and get it now. You've got 30 seconds. Okay, granddads. Sorry, ladies aged 18 plus, you're the only ones who don't get something this morning, but then you do have a pretty good life the rest of the time, don't you? Right, the minute has elapsed, so sorry, that's all. I might have one later as well. Okay, Matt, so which sweet did Paul Beasley Murray take? Okay, so that's a bit of a hard question, perhaps. Which sweet did Martin take?
I think it was one of these.
Oh, okay, right. So which was the most popular sweet?
This one.
How many of those did you give away? Yeah, which was the least popular sweet? There's all sorts of different ones, I should show this, like this one. That's like a dummy, is it, I think? Better not to put that back in there, I've touched it. I don't know what this is, like a little animal or something. Oh, yeah, that one can go back in. and some... Like little jelly baby things as well. Right. Okay. So how many people came up? How many children? How many dads?
Don't know.
Oh, you were there, weren't you? Yes, I'm sure I saw you just about in the middle. Okay, right. Well, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Matt. Take another couple of sweets while you get back. There we go. Thank you. A round of applause for Matt. There, what a way to have to celebrate your 12th birthday, but there we go. Better than going up the chimneys, I suppose. So, Matt couldn't tell, really, or remember who took which sweet. I think we have to conclude. And, really, I have to sympathise with him entirely, because from the way I was looking at it, all I could see, was a sea of hands grabbing at sweets. Now, perhaps, especially when the dads came on, and I think probably Matt had to just focus on surviving the onslaught of greedy children and even greedier dads and even greedier granddads. So I don't think we can really blame him, because all too often we see people as crowds rather than individuals. We like to put people into groups and stick labels on them. That's what I've been doing all morning, in fact, by talking about dads doing this and mums doing that. You know, let's put all the dads over there because they all like football and bad jokes. And all the mums over here because they like soaps and shopping. Let's put the children over there because they like eating sweets and going to McDonald's. And let's put all the teenagers over there because they like, well, they're good at sleeping late and grunting. And sometimes we forget that everyone is just a person, whatever group we choose to put them in. But note how different Jesus is. Here he is in the middle of the crowd, a sea of grubby hands, all trying to touch him and grab his attention. Surely he couldn't tell who touched him or care who was who. But Jesus saw not a crowd, but a collection of individual people, each with their own story and their own set of needs. Yes, there was Jairus, the rich, respected pillar of the community, now kneeling in the mud in front of him, for all his great status, just a desperate father out of his mind with worry. And then there was the woman, the complete opposite of Jairus. Her status was so low that we don't even know what her name was. She wasn't respected or looked up to. She was an outcast. Her illness meant that no one would invite her round for tea. The one thing she had in common with Jairus was that she too was desperate, having spent all her money on failed attempts to be healed. And she too knew that Jesus was her only hope. And this morning, we come here not just as a crowd, but as individuals, each with our own stories and situations. Maybe you're a dad, basking this morning in the love and admiration of your delightful children who've just showered you with presents and a full English breakfast. But maybe you're a man or a woman who would love to be a parent but can't. Or maybe you're a parent whose children right now are giving you only grief and pain, not presents. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe you're the child that's been let down by parents or adults who should have known better. Or perhaps you're the child that's grieving for parents who are no longer here. Whoever you are, and why ever you're here, welcome to this small crowd of people this morning who are simply finding Jesus and trying to follow him. Jesus, who knows your name, who knows your needs and understands your story, and who loves you beyond your wildest dreams, whoever you are. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the story of Jairus and the woman who refused to give up. Thank you that Jesus met their needs, and no doubt the needs of everyone in that crowd. You know their names and their stories, even though we don't. Thank you that your love and your power is the same today, and that you know our needs before we even ask them. So help us to keep asking, to keep seeking, and to never give up. In Jesus' name, amen.